And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. Back with you for the Law and You here on 4CRB. As always, it's your opportunity to get free legal advice. All we need you to do is telephone 5520888. That number again, 5520888. South of the Tweed River, of course, don't forget to put 07 in front of the number. But if you'd like to email us, you always can at talkback@4crb.com. If you're not in a position where you can call into the program but would like a question answered in the next program. So we can't deal with emails that come in during this program because it's live to air, but we certainly will be able to deal with those questions next week if you care to email in either today or during the coming week. So that number, 5520888, the program, of course, is for your benefit, and the great way of doing that is to call in early, because not only will your question answer a issue that may be in your mind, but highly likely there are other people out there listening who may have similar issues they're thinking about, and your call and the answer that you're given may provide them with the information that they need. But enough of that. We've got our first caller online, as we say, a very good morning to Bob. G'day, Bob. How are you today?
Hello, John.
Yes, how are you, Bob?
I'm very well, thank you. John, I have a query regarding residential bordering on council property.
Yes.
Now, our residential area borders on a walkway thoroughfare situation, and I'm just inquiring as to who would bear the cost of that. Would we liable for full cost, or would the council be involved in paying some of the cost of the fence involved?
The normal position, Bob, is that the council are not required to contribute to the cost of fencing when it is a fence between council land and that owned by private residents, unfortunately. But in a situation where you've got a walkway, which is obviously being used by the public, that does, of course, raise greater security issues. So what I would suggest you do is contact your local councillor and just ask them whether in those particular circumstances the council might be prepared to contribute to the fencing. In fact, I would be asking initially whether the council would build a fence for security purposes because of the adjoining walkway. I wouldn't hold your breath expecting that they will agree, but it's right. That old saying, Bob, isn't it? If you don't ask, you never know. So give them a call, but certainly under the fencing legislation, the dividing fences legislation, they don't have any obligation to contribute.
John, the house on the other side of the walkway is a rental, and during the recent storms, part of the fence come down and hasn't been repaired. Now, it's been viewed as being a safety matter for people walking up and down the walkway, and the council haven't sort of put any action into repairing this or being involved. Would that be an indication?
I think that would be an indication, Bob, because they're probably taking the view that the fence is a fence belonging to the resident, and they would probably be exercising their rights to say, well, we don't have an obligation either to contribute to the erection of the fence or to contribute to its repair. Where it presents a safety issue for people walking along the path, the council may take a different view, but I suspect that it may extend to simply removing the debris so that the walkway is made safe. But as I say, look, I would still be inclined to ring your local councillor and try and organise for them to come out and take a look at what you're talking about, explain the safety issues from a security perspective, and keep your fingers crossed.
Thanks very much, John.
Okay then, Bob. All the very best. Time on 4CRB just continues to roll along. It's just coming up to 10 minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. Very good morning to our listeners down there. And a very good morning to Bill. G'day, Bill. How are you today?
Oh, good morning, John. Very well, thank you. A question in relation to a trust account where a travel agent is receiver appointed. Is the trust account or funds in the trust account able to be dispersed?
So there's been a receiver appointed over a travel agency. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Right. Well, trust monies must be maintained for the purpose for which they were given. And so the receiver would basically step into the position of the travel agent and would not be able to use those funds for payment of creditors or for paying the costs of the receivership unless the... agent was lawfully entitled to take funds from that trust account for some reason. So if the legal point at which the agent was entitled to take some of those trust monies had arisen, then that may be a different story. But if the monies have been paid, for example, for deposits on trips that have never been booked and so the money's held in trust pending the booking or that sort of thing, then eventually, Bill, you should get that money back. And you should be approaching the receiver in relation to that. You could also speak to the Department of Fair Trading. Is this in Queensland?
No, the registered office for the entity is in New South Wales.
And do you know where the receiver's been appointed?
No, that I don't know at this stage.
But what I would suggest you could do initially is it, without naming the company, is it one that operates across Australia or is it just specific to Victoria?
The travel agency.
Yes, are they across Australia or just
specific to Southeast Queensland or New South Wales?
Okay, all right. Well, what I would suggest you do then is I would contact the Consumer Affairs. You're in Queensland, are you?
Yes.
Okay. Have you got a pen handy?
Yes.
So if you call 137468, that's the Office of Fair Trading, and if you ask them, they should be able to point you in the right direction as to where you can go to find out more about how you can get that money back.
Right. In essence, the receiver handles the trust account and not the principal of the travel agency.
Yes, well, once the receiver's appointed, they're appointed as receiver for the business, and that includes the control of the trust account, or should include the control of the trust account. And so, therefore, as long as the money hasn't been taken from the trust account already, then there would be no reason why the receiver would not deal with those trust funds in accordance with the trust with which they're impressed.
Right. Okay, I understand that fully.
Okay, then, Bill, all the very best with that.
Thanks very much.
And the time on 4CRB just keeps rolling along. It's just coming up to 13 and a half minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. And we say a very good morning to Graham. G'day, Graham. How are you today? Graham, hello. Are you there?
Yeah.
How can I help you today, Graham?
How do I turn this down? Yeah, thank you, John.
Turn your radio down. You'll find it a lot easier to listen.
No, that's fine. I turned it off. Yep.
How can I help?
Yeah, look, a bloodline trust.
Yes.
Has your company had any success in cracking a bloodline trust?
Not that I can recall. It doesn't matter whether a trust is a bloodline trust or an ordinary, and I presume here you're talking about testamentary trusts, are you?
If they haven't got the blood in their veins, they don't get any.
Yes, no. Well, certainly you can define the beneficiaries entitled to receive that they have to be biological descendants. There's no problem about that at all.
Because biological, eh?
Yeah, so the descendants, that can certainly be done in a trust. As to whether a trust, certainly a trust could not be contested on the grounds that it provides that the only beneficiaries are to be biological descendants. That doesn't mean, though, that a will could not be contested by someone who is entitled to contest the will before the money actually gets into the trust. But that's a very limited class of people who can contest a will. It's limited to a spouse, a child of the deceased, so that it'd have to be, for example, one of your children, but that can be a biological child, a stepchild, or an adopted child, or a dependent. And a dependent is a parent of the deceased, though that would be one of your parents, the parents of a surviving child of the deceased. So, for example, if you were divorced, your former wife, if they've got a child under 18, could bring an application for provision out of the estate to provide for that child, or a person under the age of 18 years who is dependent upon you, who's wholly or substantially dependent on you. So they're the only ones who can bring a claim on your will. But if there's no one who can bring a claim on your will under those categories, and you put the funds into a testamentary discretionary trust which specifies that the beneficiaries can only be biological, then that is not a grounds on which the trust could be challenged.
Oh, that's all right. Mm. So the word basically is biological.
Yes.
Testamentary trust, John.
It's a testamentary trust, but just the definition of child within the trust would specify that it is biological children only.
Well, my children are going to be the trustees.
Yep.
And it's all going to be transferred into a bloodline trust.
Yep.
So they're basically what I've... Down the track, the only person that can get anything are the nephews, my nieces and nephews from my son's kids. Is that about right?
Well, they wouldn't be your nephews and nieces.
I'm sorry,
they'd be your grandchildren.
Your grandchildren.
Yeah. So if you specify that the only child that can take or children that can take, including grandchildren, are to be biological, then that's a term of the trust.
Right.
All right, then.
Long as it's in black and white. Thanks, John. Thank you.
Okay, Graham, all the very best. Time on 4CRB is just past 17 minutes past 9. That's past 10 daylight saving time. The lines are presently clear, so if you have a question or a query, you can call us on 55208888. That number again, 55208888. And that call from Graham actually segues nicely into an article that's been produced by our estate litigation team this week by Margaret Miller, who heads up the estate litigation team, and Janine O'Brien, who's an associate in that area of our practice, about who can actually make a claim under a will and what does contesting a will actually mean. Well, this occurs, of course, when someone believes that they have not been adequately provided for under the terms of will, and they therefore make a claim against the estate for either provision out of the estate or for more provision. So as I explained to Graham then, in Queensland, there are very limited group of people who can make applications. So a spouse, a child, a dependent, as I was telling Graham there. But the mere fact that there are people who are eligible applicants doesn't necessarily mean that their claim will be successful. So it needs to be looked at very carefully. In Queensland, claims for provision can only be met from the assets of the estate. And so therefore, a home that's owned as joint tenants or property owned as joint tenants is excluded, as are trust and company assets. And of course, life insurance and superannuation proceeds in certain circumstances. For example, where there's a nominated beneficiary for the insurance or there's a binding death benefit nomination for the superannuation in place, then of course those assets would go directly to the people nominated as the beneficiaries and would not pass through the estate. So that's just a few of the facts. We'll come back to that if we have time. But in the meantime, we have a call from Narelle. G'day, Narelle. How are you today? Narelle, hello.
Oh, hello, John.
How are you today?
Oh, pretty good, thank you.
How can we help?
Well, I just wanted one to know, if you're going to go to a bodykeeping corporate for a meeting, do you have to let them know in writing before the meeting what you wanted to talk about in your unit? Or do you just turn up and talk about it?
Is this for a committee meeting or for an annual general meeting?
Committee meeting.
Yes, I would be inclined to give the chairman of the body corporate notice of what you want to talk about,
okay,
so that they're aware of the issues prior to the meeting.
I think they would be aware of the situation because because of all this rain damage, we've had to put a tarp on the roof, and it happens to just be coming in my unit. So, unfortunately, because it was Christmas, it was a long process, and now they've got to re-roof the whole lot. But I just didn't want to go to this meeting and then not get asked about if I get quotes for the insurance. It'll be another July.
Have you not spoken? But surely you can deal with this through the chairman of the body corporate or the secretary. I mean, you shouldn't have to be waiting for a committee meeting. This is an urgent thing that needs to be done. Is there a body corporate manager? Is it a large complex or only a small complex?
There's 10 in it, and there is a manager.
Is there, so like a company that manages the complex?
Yes.
Well, I'd be approaching them because surely this is an insurance issue that needs to be dealt with, and you should not have had to have waited since Christmas, Narelle, for this to be sorted. I mean, this is an emergency situation. If you've still got a tarp over your roof, I would be...
And it's leaking?
Yes, I would be going to the body corporate manager and just... finding out what is going on in relation to fixing it. And if the manager's not doing anything, I would be speaking to the chairman of the body corporate and getting him to bring pressure to bear on the managers to get this done. And quite frankly, Narelle, if something is not done quickly about this, I would be inclined to contact... Is this in Queensland?
Oh, yes, Gold Coast.
Yep. I would be inclined to contact the office of the body corporate commissioner. Have you got a pen handy? I can give you a number.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, so the number for the body corporate commissioner is 1-800-060-119.
060-119.
No, 119. So it's 1-800. Yeah, 1-800-060-119.
Okay.
Okay, because that's just disgraceful that you've had to wait that long. I really think that is just...
Well, I did have it sort of rented, and the real estate said I should go to the arbitration, but I sort of I don't even know what an arbitration is.
Well, if you speak to the body corporate commissioner's office, as I say, look, firstly, speak to the manager. If you don't get any satisfaction there, to the chairman of the body corporate. But I wouldn't be mucking around. I mean, that's Christmas is more than 2 months ago. And I would you've still got ongoing problems. So I would be getting onto the office of the body corporate commissioner.
And also, they said when we go to the meeting, they had to give 3 weeks' notice or something for everyone to attend. So that's only another 2 weeks, and then they said it'll be another month before we put the roof on. So as it's every night it's raining,
You're getting further water damage.
Yeah.
So is your insurance covering, what is your insurance company saying about that?
Well, I haven't rung them because I just didn't know what I was supposed to do because I'm not on the committee.
Because I think the insurer would be very concerned about the ongoing damage that's being caused to your property because of the failure to attend to these repairs promptly. So I think there could be issues with the body corporate's insurance well. So, no, I think it's a mess. So I would be inclined to be calling the body corporate commissioner's office.
Commissioner, okay. And also the mould. They say they can't get rid of the mould until they put a new roof on.
Well, that probably is true, but certainly the mould needs to be dealt with.
All right, then. Thank you for that number, John. And
no trouble at all, Narelle. All the very best. Bye now.
Bye.
Time on 4CRB is just coming up to 24 and a half minutes past nine. Is Mary still there? Mary's disappeared. Mary, if you're still out there and for some reason the phone dropped out, give us a call, 5520888. We've only got a few minutes left for calls, so if you do have a question or a query, please give us a call as soon as possible. Now, I was talking about this article that had been prepared by the estate litigation team at the office, which incidentally is available on the Bell Legal website if you want to look at it, www.belllegal.com.au. Now, The next part of it that I thought I would talk about is how a family provision claim is assessed. And when a claim's made, the court is going to look at whether the applicant is an eligible applicant, whether adequate provision's been made for them under the will, and if adequate provision has not been made, whether further provision should be made, and if so, how much. But we've got Mary back, so we'll quickly cross to Mary. Good morning, Mary. How are you today? Hello, Mary. Are you there? Oh, I see. I did hear Barry having a few problems with the phones earlier this morning with the secret sound, and so maybe, unfortunately, Mary, the same problems are afflicting you. So if you give us another try, we'll do our very best. So when the court's considering if further provision should be made, and if so, what amount, the sort of things that the court will consider are the size of the estate, the current and future needs of the beneficiaries who are actually provided for under the will, including their current financial position and health, and also their personal circumstances. Importantly, the current and future needs of the applicant, including their current financial position, health and personal circumstances, and any other relevant factors, for example, any contribution that might have been made by the claimant or the relationship between the claimant and the deceased. Now, it's not the court's obligation to consider whether the terms of the will are fair and equal. It's up to the court to consider the claim against those criteria. And one of the very important factors to consider is that quite often you will find that people who are quite well off but who've been left out of will might make a claim because they are miffed by the fact that they haven't been included in the will. Now, if they are particularly well off by comparison to the other beneficiaries under the will, who might be their siblings, for example, there is a very real chance that the court will say, well, look, your financial circumstances are such that we don't believe any further provision should be made for you. And in those circumstances, there is a real possibility that the court will make an order for costs against the unsuccessful claimant, because the courts are getting very, very annoyed at legal costs being thrown away in estate provision disputes. Quite often the legal costs can run up to tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, and dissipate a large part of the estate. So the courts are looking at that very, very carefully. We have another caller online. We've got Dot this time, so we'll say a very good morning to Dot. G'day, Dot. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Thanks. How can I help you today?
I would like to ask a question. I've got a friend who not long purchased a house, and it's just I'm guessing I've been trying to work out the answer to this question. I mm-hmm. thought you might be able to help me.
Sure.
She was saying to me she would like to there's a 2/3 of a fence on her left boundary, and she would like to continue that down, you know, to make a full fence and put a front fence. And she said to me, does the neighbour actually have a say in whether I can have, you know, continue that fence down or not, or apart from me asking them, you know, would you like to pay for half? Do they actually have a right to say, no, I don't want one?
No, they don't. So this is covered under the dividing fences legislation. What your neighbour obviously should do in the first instance is approach the neighbour and say, look, I'd like to continue the fence to complete it. What I propose to do, and would you be agreeable to contributing half that cost? And if the neighbour says no, then you need to bring an application serve them with what's commonly referred to as a notice of fence, which has a couple of quotes attached for the cost of doing the fence. If the neighbour still refuses, then you can bring an application to the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal for an ordered fence, which will specify the type of fence and how the cost will be shared. In relation to the front fence, if that's onto the street, your friend will be solely responsible for the cost of that fence.
Yes. No, I don't think that he has necessarily any need to think that they will say no, but she just said,
wants
I've
to
never
know a position.
Before, so yet.
Well, what do they say? Forewarned is forearmed.
Exactly.
Yes. All right, then.
Thank you.
Okay, Dot, all the very best. Well, that's probably about all the time we've got for calls today. Just quickly finishing on that article that I was mentioning before by the Wills and Estates or the estate litigation team at the office. The one important thing is that strict time limitations do apply in relation to claims for provision under a will, and so therefore you need to seek legal advice promptly. And be aware that the time limits do vary in the various states. So the article I've referred to is primarily in relation to Queensland, and what assets can a family provision claim can be made against do also vary in other states, particularly New South Wales comes to mind, where they have a concept called notional estate, which can mean that even a property owner's joint tenants can form part of the assets for a claim in New South Wales. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning for The Law and You. I look forward to being back next week for another program. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.